Welcome to the MadTech Podcast special from ExchangeWire, a weekly deep dive into a pressing industry issue.
Hello and welcome to this special episode of the MadTech Podcast, where we dive deep into a hot topic that's impacting the digital and marketing ecosystem. I'm Lindsay Rowntree, ExchangeWire COO, and I'm today's host. And the hot topic today is first-party data, and specifically the challenges of activating first-party data in an ecosystem, the marketing and advertising ecosystem. And to help me unpack this and unpack why it's happening and exactly how, what we can do about it and how we can rethink first-party data activation, I'm delighted to welcome my two very special guests, Rob McLaughlin, who brings experience from Sky and Barclays, where he's witnessed these challenges firsthand before founding audiences to pioneer in-cloud privacy-first data activation, and Sandy Gooman, who provides the brand perspective, the all-important brand perspective, drawing on her work from Silver Bullet, Sky, Experience, Yell, and now EasyJet, where she leads customer data and transformation initiatives. Welcome, one and all. Lovely to have you here.
Thank you.
How are
great
we
to be here.
Yeah, great.
I hear it's an on-stage reunion of sorts for you both.
It is a reunion, right?
Absolutely. After a number of years, we've done a lot of work together in the past. We've done a lot of shared stages together.
I always like to think like we semi did like a world tour at one point when we were at Sky.
I love that.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So, reunion, first party data. This is a big topic and it's your lifeblood, Rob. I want to understand kind of what the challenge is. Why are there such struggles? And Sandy, I'll come to you first, because obviously you've got the brand perspective, you've worked kind of across many different brands and many different perspectives. What is the big challenge of activating first-party data? Kind of why are we seeing these blockers? It feels like, is it a complexity issue? Is it a kind of a resource issue, a cultural issue? What's happening?
So I think there's been a lot of evolution over the years. There was a period of time when there was a lot of focus on data, a lot of focus on improving the quality and the depth and the breadth of data. And then along came the complexities around how you actually activate it and take that into different ecosystems to be able to actually leverage it and drive value. And then there's been a period of time where a lot of brands have been investing into technologies, MarTech and ad technologies as well. But actually, you know, almost the marrying up of data and technologies, I think that's where the complexities are. Mm. And along with that, then it's a cultural shift as well. So whilst brands have got lots of data, they've got the right, you know, they've invested a lot in tools and technologies to be able to activate it. A lot of the activation is still very much siloed, user case driven. Data and access to data still sits in different teams. The technologies don't always, sync with each other. And then the teams don't necessarily, brands aren't working cross-functionally in a seamless way at times. So all of that provides a lot of friction to actually being able to understand your data, leverage the insights that you've got and push those out into being able to connect with the customer in the right way.
I mean, all of that is a lot. We're looking at a lot of different pillars here that aren't coming together to really make this work. Rob, from your perspective, where you sit, and obviously drawing on your own brand experience as well, like what for you is there one thing that kind of is the biggest factor above and all everything else? Or is there a kind of healthy mix of everything? And like how are you, you know, what's your role in trying to help people like brands overcome that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a sad story that you told, isn't it?
It is. Because I mean, like, it's quite depressing.
I mean, it's been like decades as well, right? I mean, luckily we've had a good time.
Yeah.
So we've made the most of it. But it's been like two decades of I mean, that whole mix of stuff. And like, yeah, I mean, I often refer to it as like a deadly cocktail, like for the last 20 years. Because whether it's the complexity, I know you love that word, Lindsay.
I do enjoy the word complexity.
You really do. You keep tainting me with it.
I've been called out by you for saying that data activation is complex, and your argument is, well, it really isn't. Like,
it really shouldn't be. But Sandy's right.
People making it out to be complex, and actually, it's not. Like, what's the blocker in people thinking it's complex when it really isn't?
Well, there's definitely a bit of that.
Yeah.
But actually, the last 20 years, there's been a lot going on in data and technology, and like a lot of it for good reason.
Yeah.
But it's created like I said, I think like a deadly cocktail, which is why why so little has been achieved in these last two decades. And I, you know, yes, data and technology can be very complicated. There's been massive changes regarding the scale of data, massive changes regarding where that data is collected and managed, thinking of the huge cloud and data warehouse migrations which have happened, you know, at the brand side, in the publisher side, in every part of the industry. You know, this world has been transformed through cloud compute and storage. But then regulation. Now, for the good, come on. It was so necessary. So data privacy and data security are very good reasons that, you know, people have got tied up with all of this stuff. And I mean, I think it's worth saying, talking about data and technology for two decades gets a bit boring. You get worn out, worn out. So you can't have too many strategic initiatives year after year after year on this stuff before exec starts to get like frustrated with it. And then cost. Because none of these problems have stopped people spending gigantic sums of money on technology. It's a pretty sad story, isn't it? It's surprising we're still smiling.
It's amazing. And actually, it's an interesting point. You talk about, you know, the past few decades, this is the journey you've been on. Because Sandy, your current role, you know, you have transformation in your title. And it feels like surely the transformation should have been done by now. What is there still to transform? Right? Obviously, not just from an EasyJet perspective, but from everywhere you've worked and kind of what you're seeing generally. Why are we still having to transform what data looks like? Shouldn't we be there by now? Shouldn't we have understood all of its many guises? The data, how much has the data changed to require this to be a function?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, actually. And well, firstly, I think brands are at different stages as well in terms of their evolution and their pace to transformation. And I also feel that some of that transformation in some brands could be hindered through concerns around data privacy regulations, but also really complex legacy systems and, you know, tech debt as well, which actually gets in the way. But yeah, fundamentally, the data is a core ingredient throughout all of that. And the principles around data actually haven't changed. So going back to, it's the same old story, right, around data. It's about managing, collecting it, managing it, joining it together, and then being really smart in terms of leveraging the insights and using data to drive those decisions and having a simple way of actually being able to activate it. And I think we've touched on complexities as well. I feel complexities is almost like it's a barrier. If you talk, you know, it's people expect things to be complex, and actually how True. You're implementing things, how you actually roll technology out or platforms out, the user cases you have, the prioritization. Working smarter, a bit more agile as well, and it ties into a cultural thing, and being able to then demonstrate value, speed to value faster, and getting that momentum, that's where we should be going. And some brands are doing that better than others, but some legacy brands with a lot of legacy tech and processes and old cultural views, maybe, that's the hindrance there, I'd say.
So what becomes the starting point of, okay, I'm already collecting all of this first party data. I'm using it here and there. Like, I've got certain teams kind of dipping into it for marketing campaigns, but no one really kind of is taking, like, where does the task of ownership and responsibility and then kind of farming out that function to different departments that actually need it and use it, kind of what does that look like in practice?
I actually think it starts with the customer and the business outcomes
right.
first.
Okay.
Yeah. So it shouldn't be about, okay, we need the data to do this. It's around, well, where are we going as a business? What are we wanting to achieve? what's going to move the dial in terms of KPIs, how we're going to be able to measure some of that, what the outcomes we're looking for. And then that drives what you need to have in place. Have we got the right data? Have we got the right insights? Have we got the platforms to be able to, you know, activate that and respond, either respond to events, for example, you know, this week's been a great example, or to be able to know exactly what we know about our customers and be able to give them the best and the most relevant experience when we actually find them in the ecosystem.
I mean, I absolutely agree. And like, data isn't an end in itself. Like,
no.
it's not an interesting subject of a conversation or a project. And I always appreciate like Hannah Fisher, who I think both of you know, CMO of Saga PLC, like amazing client of ours. And yeah, as a senior marketer, she only wants to see or hear about data if it's in contribution to those objectives that you're talking about, like customer orientated ones. And I think that's right. That's how a data driven, if you like, marketer should show up, is not talking about data, talking about their objectives, and then expecting that they're going to be able to use the data that they need quickly and efficiently, and most of their thinking has already been done about like how do you create it and activate it. They shouldn't. It shouldn't kick off a project of like how are you going to use data. It should be a reflex. Suddenly you can just get to work.
So Hannah Fisher's approach is right, but it sounds like it's rare. Why? And you know, obviously, you know, Sandy's talking from the data angle, the data perspective, and you're talking about Hannah obviously being from the actual sort of the marketing side, the CMO perspective. What role are you having to play in kind of bringing those two functions together and helping them understand how they can both benefit each other?
Yeah, I mean, Sandy mentioned culture earlier. So obviously, there's technology, there's software. Audiences plays a role there, but in order to bring the right people together, you need to have the marketer talk to the data and technology people in a language which they can communicate with each other effectively. And I think that does take work. I know, Sandy, you've always been like at that nexus of marketing, data and technology, right?
Yeah, and even in my role now as well, it is very much being that middle person, almost translating the complexities of the technology and the data, but into business outcomes and the language, and almost bringing to life, well, what's that going to enable for you as a marketer in this area, or for a product owner who's looking after certain types of journeys and things. So I actually think having that in between kinds of expertise with a foot both in the complexities of what the data we have and what the gaps are, where it needs to get to, but also why, in terms of what are the outcomes we're wanting to achieve, but also around really simplifying that to helping marketing teams, campaign teams, media teams, to be able to really see the value of what that can bring.
Yeah.
And I think that's been a lot of times culturally that is the missing piece, because actually at times if the end user who could be an agency or a partner or a marketing team, they don't always have access to the tech and the data scientists and the people that are doing the actual raw work in the background, but they don't also speak the same language.
No, that's a massive part of it, isn't it?
And, the business can't wait. Like one of the things which we often see, and again, like one of the saddest things, is like the media is going to get bought anyway. The campaign's going to go live anyway. So if the data's like not ready to play at the point, like you said, like with the travel chaos of the last few weeks, things need to move quickly. And by the way, the campaign's going to go out. If the data isn't ready to serve the campaign's still going to go. No campaign was ever shelved because the data or the audience selections or segments weren't ready. The media always went out the door. And that's why and we see it all the time, why brands and data providers, they need to curate their data in advance, have it prepared, ready. It's not difficult to foresee what's going to be necessary. And they need the pathways to be prepared for how you activate. And so any, like, a campaign cannot kick off a data and technology project.
No, you're absolutely right. And because the marketing plans, the briefs, the, you know, the laydowns of the activity that's going to happen, that's always going to happen. Whether it's actually leveraging first party data or whether it's leveraging, you know, pre-bought audiences out there in the media space. But the difference, and actually this is a lot of what I also focus on and I've focused on in previous brands as well, is around that, almost that mindset change of, you're going to be spending this money anyway. Why don't you drive more efficiencies from the money that you're going to be spending from your marketing activity, either by including audiences and segments that it's actually going to be really relevant for, or excluding them. And where you're excluding them, serve them a better, more targeted message in a slightly different way. So it is really around how you're actually activating data and how you're using the insights and what you've learned about the customer to serve the right kind of experience and the action and the personalization to them. But it's going to happen anyway. Mm. So it's not about saying, stop your campaigns, just make them more targeted and relevant.
And I know Lindsay at ATS last year, it was really interesting talking about the amount of data or the amount of media which still goes uninfluenced by data, right?
Exactly.
And it's confronting for, you know, it's 2026, right? Still most of the media that's deployed is through agencies. Now, this is, I have no conspiracy theory that I'm going to float about why they, their role in bringing or not bringing data to campaigns. But what I will say is they do a great job at deploying those campaigns. Yeah, they get them out the door, they get the spend away, and that's what the client wants. That so they're doing the right thing. But that's why, you know, 2 years ago we essentially held a mirror up to the industry by asking them, like, what percentage of media that you buy is influenced by any form of first party data? And I probably don't need to say it again, but it's like less than 3% of media that is bought, is influenced by. So something's not working, is it?
No.
Yeah.
But actually, but on that point, when we were at Sky, and, you know, at Sky, we were pretty advanced in being able to connect first-party data into digital platforms and CRM platforms. And when we kicked that off, one of the things that I was quite involved in was actually more around a little bit of governance around, well, how are you using your data? How are you targeting your campaigns? Because ultimately, in my view, any campaign should either be targeting first-party data or excluding first-party data, depending on the key message and the objective. Yes, there'll be some campaigns and activities which are definitely more overall brand-led and they're relevant for everybody, but still there's some kind of, creatively, there's some personalization that can be put into it. So really, the data or the insights from the data should be featuring into what you know about your customers, should be featuring into every piece of...
We've had a really interesting metric come up with several clients recently where they're asking, like, they're looking at the media plan, whether it's annual or quarterly, and just saying, hey, look, campaign by campaign, channel by channel, what's the role of our first party data, and how can we bring it in? And the answer is, there's always, like you said, like almost every campaign, other than the highest brand one, is going to be either acquisition, you always articulate it so clearly, acquisition. That means you need to deterministically suppress for your existing customers, because you don't want, by definition, you don't want an acquisition campaign showing for an existing customer, because it's supposed to be net new.
Of course.
Okay, so yeah, media loves scale. That is a great way to achieve scale whilst doing great acquisition. And then what's the other category? It's upsell, cross-sell, for customer growth. Well, I don't need to, we don't need to tell people the role of data there. That's obvious. But like it's yeah. So really, you're at 90% of the plan. Pets at Home are a great example. Like yeah, they do wonderful brand-led campaigns all the time. But you know, underneath that, their acquisition and customer growth strategies. All the way through the funnel, right? Everything from search through to out of home, audio, you know, all of the amazing stuff they do via global. It's all either acquisition or customer growth. And yeah, I mean, there's just, and there's use cases galore, yeah, aren't there?
Absolutely.
For how you use data.
You raised a good point about how the data is being used. And my question I was going to ask you was, and it's going to be the dumbest question I ask all year, but like, what is data? Like, and by that, I mean, what, because certainly legacy brands, there's you know, there's a history of, well, we can capture anything, so let's just capture it all and let's see what we can do with it, and let's kind of like keep it stored away, and that we've got, we like, you want something on this person, I've got it, like, but then they store this data and don't know what to do with it or where it goes. So how much of a problem is that there's too much data being captured and unnecessary data being captured versus what actually is fundamentally going to be useful for a campaign? Is that like a barrier to entry for a lot of people, or a blocker for them going, well, there's so much of it, I don't know where to start? And then the other question that I just thought of while you were talking, Rob, about the different channel selection is, are we seeing data being used better on certain digital channels over and above other channels? And how can we evolve that? There's two completely random separate questions there, but let's start with the kind of like, what is data? How is it being captured?
So I think, yeah, you're absolutely right. Data is, it's information,
yeah,
right? It signals on customers, consumers, prospects even. But actually using that, it's not about having access to all of that. It's about how you package that up, simplify that, give it to the end user and say, right, this is the most relevant cohort or you know, if it's part of a life cycle, when you find this individual, based on everything combined together around all the data signals, this is the next best action or interaction or engagement experience we want to be able to give that person. Now, so ultimately, what we're wanting to use is the outcome of what we're wanting to achieve on this individual once we find them. And that, I think, is... that's the evolution and the thinking, because historically it's been around, okay, we've got all this data, okay, we need certain attributes to be able to build a segment, and that segment may get activated as a one-off or a tactical campaign. But it's actually very much around combining all those signals and almost having a view of, okay, is the next best thing to grow this customer, get them to buy more, or are we looking for them to come back after they've completed a trip or a journey, for example, in our case, or actually they're not even in the market to be purchasing, so it maybe it'd be more of a brand type of campaign and an engagement type of campaign. So that to me is how data should be used and seen.
I mean, you use the word signal, and you know, I love language and using language to, you know, to deploy the meaning, and you're always brilliant at that. Like, ad tech shouldn't care about data. It should care about signal. Like, ad tech and advertising shouldn't have a direct relationship with data and information. It should have a relationship with signal. And yeah, and that's like a signal would be something which is meaningful for meeting your objective. And organizations, yeah, we're decades now away from when people used to talk about, you know, data is the new oil, or like is an asset in the company. I would say like that information, then data, and at that level, still that's no currency to anyone. That's not valuable. In advertising, when you have managed to get your data to a point where, one, it's meaningful for what you want to do, and two, it's got a currency, so it can be delivered to somewhere where activation happens. It's at that point you've got signal, and that's exciting. Just because you asked a fascinating question about the role of data in channels.
Channels, yeah.
I mean, we've seen so much evolution. So, like, like 3 years ago, I would have said, you know, search is massively hungry for data. Yeah. Now it's very interesting. It still is, but everything that's happened regarding PMax is that actually platform data is interesting. Segue into walled gardens, you've got a similar story regarding creative or Meta. Everything they're saying is correct, but at the same time, you can game the system and get advantage by bringing your data. So like search and social remains super, I would say, data like thirsty. But then, I mean, it's just been amazing. Like the open internet and the role that programmatic has to play.
Great.
It's borderline like infinite inventory. And when you bring your signals, your first party signals to the open internet. The open internet suddenly becomes like you can turn it, you can get a whole load of the parameters and metrics that are amazing about walled gardens. You can start to achieve those in the open internet. And like, I know that's why, at audiences, our relationship with the trade desk, with Index Exchange exploding, and like why our clients are so hungry, both on the buy and the sell side of media, like they're rushing to bring that signal to programmatic, because you can achieve the types of stuff we've all been achieving in the walled gardens in programmatic now. And it's almost political. Like there's so much to fight for regarding like freedom of speech and like free publication that the open internet supports. So there's so many reasons to be doing it. Look, good news is a great way of making money as well. If you don't mind, I'll just complete because
loving this tangent.
I'm not just making my way through the channels. The fire hose of TikTok and Snap. Oh my gosh, like if you've got objectives like all marketers do, acquisition or customer growth, you have to bring your data to those platforms. They're not useful otherwise. So it's there. CTV is incredible. Obviously, Sandy, you and I were close to everything regarding AdSmart at Sky and similar. That area has properly evolved. Bringing data to CTV is amazing. And to round it off, audio out of home, digital out of home, but even old fashioned out of home. Yeah. There's so much,
you're
right?
Great
there's so
stuff.
Much. When I'm in Waterloo on the way home, I used to be frustrated that the laydown for the big advertisers who advertise in Waterloo were it was just like spray and pray. You could see the egos. Now I know when I see like the Hargreaves Lansdowne ad that I saw last night, it's like I know that the buying behind that was informed by first party data, by demographics, a whole load of postcodes and like routing was put in. I think that's dead cool. And it ends up in there being more advertising, more scale, more outcomes, all the things that Sandy expressed. It's what marketers need.
What about from an omnichannel perspective? Because obviously that's a big, I think that's a big word I'm hearing all the time this year. Certainly, obviously it's always been a common need in advertising, but we're really seeing a shift from the end of multi-channel to the future of omnichannel. That must play a huge role in what you need to deliver on the data front to help furnish an omnichannel strategy.
It really does. And I think very much so, many, many brands are still operating in silos.
Yeah.
And some of it's also around the internal culture and the setup of the teams. Because you have email teams who are only focused on their email campaigns, and then you've got digital and media teams who are only really focused on what's happening here, and then you've got your digital experience teams who are really only really looking at, okay, what's their app doing, what's their website doing, for example. And actually, and this is where I do also think that the role of the data specialists and or the insight specialists, product owners, that's the opportunity to really drive that cross-functional thinking and that cross-channel thinking to be able to, again, going back to, it's not the data. It's when you see that customer, whether you see them in email, you're pushing out an email to them, whether you see them on programmatic, in terms of digital space or social media, or if they're actually engaging in the app, really and truly, the decision around what do we want to talk to them about when you see them at that point in time should be consistent across all those channels. That's not happening, really. That is, I'd say, some of the limitations.
You've gone straight ahead and proved that Omni is not just the name of a terrible nightclub in Las Vegas. Yeah. I would just say, like, CRM managers are, I mean, bless them, it's not a glamorous job, but I reckon, and like over the last few years, they have been, I would say they're some of the most useful, undervalued characters in an organization, because like they trade in known identifiers, deterministic identifiers, email address, telephone number, like that stuff's like stardust, isn't it? It's so powerful. And yeah, they've been cranking out like direct campaigns in email and SMS and stuff like that. When you bring that kind of gold, those type of identifiers to the open internet, obviously the walled gardens as well, but like it's so cool. And yeah, like these guys have it's quite an unglamorous job, isn't it, being a CRM manager? But I think they're ready for a rebrand.
I think they are, and I think in CRM teams, still a lot of CRM is focused on email or push or SMS. And linking into the identifiers, I also think that's some of the barriers around pure omnichannel. And this is where you know, audiences plays a big part, really, because it's about being able to find a way to seamlessly be able to connect all those identifies in privacy-safe environments and having that known common signal or identity across all of those channels and the ecosystem synchronising together seamlessly.
So what does that then look like in practice? So we talked, you know, you talked about CRM teams and the fact that they largely focus on email. How does it work? Like if I think about like procurement in a large brand, the media procurement person will have a stakeholder within each of the different departments and they'll go to them and say, right, explain to me how this works. Can you have the same thing with data? Like can data, a data specialist be like, right, I need to speak to you in out of home, I need to speak to you in audio, let's bring this together. Kind of how can we connect those dots, certainly with legacy companies? What does that look like?
Yeah, and I think that's the role of some of the data product owners, product managers, because they understand data and what it can actually unlock if it's used well, or the signals are used well in terms of what you know, what insights the data provides, and they're almost, and it's a knowledge share, bringing people on that journey, being advocates around. Truly understanding what the marketing teams are trying to achieve as well, or the CRM teams are trying to achieve. So I think it's quite a proactive approach as well.
Yeah.
So it's not just about, okay, this is a brief we've received from CRM or from marketing, but it's also about, this is the art of possible. This is what we can achieve with the insights that we have.
I'm going to be boring for a moment, every channel has specialists, and every channel is specialist, right? And there's, you know, digital out of home is very, very different to social. It's very, very different to CTV, etc. And you don't want to crush the individuality of those channels by making them conform in some way to each other.
Yeah.
And I'm proud to say, like, that's a massive role that audiences plays, is, you know, in those stages of going from data to signal. Like for data to become a signal in those channels, it needs to be delivered in a currency which those channels understand. And you should not argue with those channels. You can't, I don't know, look at digital out of home and go, why are you so obsessed with postcode? Can't you do email? Well, it's like the nature of the channel is like, you can't look at programmatic and go, maids are really fiddly. Why can't you just take a hem? It's in those stages of turning information to data to signal that, I'll use the word, where you have to respect the schemas of those channels. And you know, that's when data goes from being valueless, I would say, and I think it's worth pointing in and go, that's valueless. But when you make it, when you refine it and make it something which can be delivered into a channel, it's a signal. You're valuable.
Yeah, interesting. I want to briefly bring back, you obviously made a comment about agencies earlier, and I want to, and the agency question I have is more related around outcomes and objectives. And the is there a disconnect between what the brand's outcome or objective is and how that gets communicated to an agency? And does that then impact how data is then applied to campaigns? Because I suppose where I'm going with this is, if there is like a data activation gap, is there a miscommunication between all the different departments, and then you bring agencies into that just to add another layer of complexity to it, because it does add another layer of complexity in some cases. Is that causing challenges for, okay, well, here's our ultimate objective, our ultimate outcome as a business, as a brand, and we want you to run this campaign based on this brief. Does that then mean that they don't then go, well, actually, we'd love this data, because that then ties back to what you're trying to achieve here? Is there work to be done in those relationships?
I do believe there is. I think actually agencies want to get closer to the insights.
I do agree.
And the signals and what they can inform in terms of what they're actually activating and running. And I think it just goes back to some of the cultural and the siloed ways of working that actually is hindering some of that.
They want to be let in.
They do.
Yeah.
And I've seen that. I saw that at Sky. I've seen that when I was at Silver Bullet working with clients. I see that here as well at EasyJet. You know, the relationship with agencies tends to be with the marketing teams, and it's almost, and this is what I'm doing. I'm actually putting myself out there.
Nice.
Saying, look, you know, we can help you unlock the value of what we know about the customers, because ultimately that's what it's about, right? It's about using what you know to make the right decisions to connect with the customer. And it's how then along the way that can get facilitated. But again, I do think there's a lot of work to be done in that space.
Our team would say, you know, getting like booking meetings with agency teams and going to their offices and getting quality time with them is one of the easiest things to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They like they love talking to us.
Yeah.
They love understanding the approaches, learning, I hope, from us.
They're hungry for it.
They're really hungry for it. And they're smart, and that is great. So, I mean, so like creds to them. But yeah, you know, you said it. They're starved of the signal which they so desperately need.
Yeah.
And rightly, the responsible for signal delivery sits with the boring word warning, like the data owner. And the data owner is often the brand, the advertiser. I think it's really interesting, actually. You can see the willingness of agencies to use data, to use signal, in the explosion over the last few decades of third-party data.
Yeah.
Right. So they don't use third party data because they hate first party data. They use third party data because of the absence of first party signal. And you see it in accounts, and yeah, probably our friends at WPP, Dentsu, etc. You know, they'll say like the proportion of like the amount that is spent on third party data starts to go down when you use first. But actually, it starts to come back up again once you're using first and third. It all gets very exciting. And like some of, yeah, we can't get away with you not talking about Experian. I mean, I think some of the stuff that Experian are pioneering in the UK in being able to bring first-party signal to advertising on behalf of brands and advertisers, and enabling them to marry it up with identity and third-party data, which they have, that's like a massive win for clients and agencies, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And sometimes it's almost like a phased approach as well, I'd say, to kind of kick off that marrying of signals and agencies and activation, and also some of the capabilities that data vendors are providing. You know, an example I'm going to use is, for instance, just profiling your customer base and knowing more around their behaviours and their habits, both around what you know about the customer within the brand, but also about what information's out there around those customers as well. And to package that up, and in the absence of actually being able to have access to the first party signals, sometimes a starting point to kind of prove out the use of insights and data is to be able to almost like lookalike targeting or buying off the shelf audiences once you've done that profiling with somebody like Experian, for example, proving that out, testing that, sharing some uplift from that, and then also then bringing in the first party layers to inform those audiences even more.
There's so much at hand for an increasing amount, so much at hand for marketers, for agencies to be able to use. Signal is exploding. Like we should mention, like the explosion of like third party transactional data. I love what MasterCard did. So you can transact direct with MasterCard, and you can buy data sets. But it's actually an ecosystem, like that they've created. An amazing client of ours, Transact Media Group, Joel and his team there, that they've refined that. Those transaction signals and brought them like with the right identifiers to the demand and the supply side. And like, so they're not a data company, they're a signal company. Like Outra for property orientated data, another great example, right? They're suddenly like, they've exploded onto the demand and the supply side. Like Index Exchange, you can now buy their signal right there and pipe it into your deals. It's amazing. And this is a change in our industry. Like 3 years ago, marketers and agency teams didn't have access to this type of quality signal.
I want to close off kind of drawing on everything we've talked about here. So we mentioned signals, we mentioned omnichannel, we mentioned kind of the disconnects, the typical barriers to entry, you know, things like culture, things like resource, things like kind of just understanding what data you have. We're in a world where, you know, arguably kind of data privacy and data security has never been more important, but also data has never been more needed. What are you seeing? What's the kind of exciting, the most exciting things happening for you when it comes to the activation of first party data over the kind of the course of the next sort of 12 to 18 months? What are you seeing that's kind of making you think? I mean, you mentioned earlier, Rob, in the past 3 years, we've seen incredible progress. What do the next 3 years look like for you both?
I would say it's very much around moving from siloed user cases, you know, in different channels or across different teams, different propositions, to really being able to tap into the art of possible around, you know, lifecycle journeys, customer journeys. I think the tools, the capabilities, the data, I think all of that is there. Mm-hmm. And I generally think it's that cultural shift and ways of working and operating models, and including data privacy, because the regulations around data privacy, you know, just it's enabling brands to think more seriously about their data and give them a bit more control around what that's going to unlock and how that's going to get used. But I think the combination of all of that with the right cultural shift and operating models and governance can really enable that unlocking of real customer journey personalization. Really some prioritizing those user cases, and then also being able to come up with what does success look like, having the right measurement frameworks, and being able to ultimately demonstrate the value of all the data and the signals, because that's what it's about, right? It's we invest in understanding more about the customer so that we can have increased loyalty, find more of those customers, get them to keep on coming back, sell more to them. And if we're able to do that through all the signals that we've got and just joining those together and package them up and giving them to the teams that need to be able to act on that, then we're off.
Brilliant. You paint such a good picture of it. Rob, do you agree?
I absolutely agree. Like right at the top of the pod, like, we did quite a good job of painting like a bad picture of the last couple of decades.
A sad story.
A sad story, right?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of amazing work has been done. And like when we talk about it with client teams, we're like, well, we have the opportunity to stand on the shoulders of giants. Mm. So whether you're a brand or an advertiser, a data owner, like the last 10 years, you have, whether you like it or not, have been on a gigantic data technology transformation of cloud infrastructure and data warehousing. So, you know, your average retailer or insurer is using incredible cloud capability and data warehousing capability from the likes of Snowflake. And you have the opportunity to go from being just the data owner to being a data exploiter. So you can
like that.
Yeah, you can turn that data into signal and deliver it. And that surprise, like audiences provides an app which goes into those infrastructures and allows it turns you from being just the data owner into a data exploiter. And all of those people that we talked about earlier, whether it's agency teams, marketers, etc., they'll all benefit. Mm. And our ecosystem overall on the demand and supply side will benefit.
So what would you both say? What's the one piece of advice you would give to data specialists within brands, to marketing specialists within brands, to go from being, you know, a data owner to be a signal owner and a data exploiter?
I would say have a solid roadmap, like prioritize use cases. Mm. Think about the business outcome and the customer. And what's going to give you your biggest uplift. And just have some cross-functional teams working strongly together, whether that's internal and with external partners as well. And then just get some momentum beyond that.
Brilliant. Rob?
Yeah, I just treat it like the commercial advantage that it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting. It gives you edge. It's how you access scale in media. Be excited for that and prioritize it and don't look for the simplicity, not the complexity.
Not the complexity.
Yeah.
Look, don't be Lindsay and look for the complexity.
No, don't be less Lindsay. because, you know, commercial priorities, I know this is boring, but like they're going to be quarterly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's 3 months. Yeah, there you go. So you need to, whatever you're going to do to turn, let's say, data into signal, it better take less than 3 months. Yeah, we're looking for in quarter impact here.
Yeah,
this can't be another tragic data and technology project. Or transformation. You know, it has to be something we can do.
Don't
now.
Insult Sandy's job title.
I know. Sorry, I just realised.
Unbelievable.
No worries at all. No, but you're absolutely right. I actually do think simplicity. You know, identifying those user cases, trying to remove the noise and the complexities, reduce the fragmentation and simplicity, speed to value. It's really important, you know, speed without being able to demonstrate any value, then those projects are just ticking along and not getting covered up. So, yeah.
Fantastic. What a wonderful way to end. Nice and positive. I do like that after the sob story that we started with. Thank you so much, Sandy and Rob, for joining me today. It's been lovely to have you here. And thank you, everyone, for watching and listening. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to this MadTech podcast special. We'll be back to discuss another hot industry topic soon.